This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Yeah, buddy, it's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and we're heading towards Cowboys-Saints Sunday at noon right here on The Fan, pregame at 9 with Broaddus and Chiafalo. And for more on this week's NFL headlines, here's Wolchuk.
Yeah, man, the trash talk has already started. As Dak's talking to the media, he says he's got a couple buddies, obviously, from in Louisiana that have already been texting and blowing up his phone saying, "Who dat?" So hopefully Dak goes out there and has his buddies going
who
on
Dak?
Very upset. Yeah, who Dak? Go out there and throw 404 touchdowns.
You would have got blocked from me.
Yeah.
I'm the Cowboys quarterback. Who that? Blocked.
Yeah. I'm not here for this trash talk, all right? Now, Dak's getting a lot of love, a lot of praise. We'll get to Bill Belichick in about an hour. He's been loving Dak Prescott, well-deserving of his contract as well. But I know this had to pain one specific member now of the media, Jason Kelce, former Philadelphia Eagle, went on the podcast with his buddy Travis, and he had to give number four his respect.
I'm going to say this, and I think it's probably going to upset some Eagles fans. I like where Dak Prescott is at right now. Like, when he, you can see it in his interviews, how much more comfortable he is being like a leader in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
I think early on in his career, and anybody's like this, you're going to get more generic answers. You're not going to get a lot of depth. You're not going to get really insight into who he is. And I think that's a big turning moment for a lot of players when, like, I'm just going to say whatever the fuck I want because this is where I'm at and I'm confident in who I am and what I can do. In the last 2 years, you've seen, I just feel like he's more confident. It appears on the field, off the field. It just, I'm digging his entire vibe right now.
He's figured it out, man. Yeah. He's figured it out. So, and he knows it. And on top of that, I was talking to Chris Jones in the locker room today about it. And he was mentioning to me, he's like, "Man, a lot of guys don't know Dak Prescott, one of the hardest working guys out there."
Yeah.
I was like, "What? How do you know this, Chris?
How do you know this, Tim Meadows?"
Well, they did play together there at Mississippi State, but how about a Chris Jones impression from Travis there? But yeah, I mean, Jeff Saturday on ESPN was getting in a fight with Screamin' A. Smith about Dak as well. He gave like a Dak-Peyton Manning comparison. Peyton was another quarterback that was thought of as like, you're a regular season champ, you can't get it done in the playoffs, and finally he broke through. Now, granted, he had made a conference championship game at this point but couldn't get past the hurdle of Brady and Belichick, and then finally was able to catch in. But Dak's getting a lot of praise right now from his NFL well-respected fellow members there.
Yeah, so, yeah. Incredible. And, you know, I think it's an interesting observation. I wonder if what he's picked up on is the recent aggression from Dak in the media because he was in the midst of a negotiation, you know, where you're speaking more freely. Maybe you're backed up against a wall. You're throwing bombs about the owner that maybe you would never think of doing publicly. So we'll see. But, you know, I trust Jason's read on it. He's been in the NFL. He's seen a lot of guys come and go. And I definitely agree the longer these guys are in, they figure out a great comfort zone where they can show more and more of their personality. But I also think Jason has shot now way past Travis in the cool guy category. I think since he retired, he's doing this podcast. He has spots. You know, he picked up like the most handsome man of the year type of deal.
He did.
And Travis has kind of slid into being like a Ken doll for his girlfriend rock star.
Ooh, getting shout outs from Taylor Swift at the VMAs last night, that kind of role. But yeah, I mean, Jason knows Dak. I mean, he's played against him plenty of times. But I did love an Eagle having to take a moment to show some love to a Dallas Cowboy.
Well, it's important though too, for, you know, he's taken the approach that a lot of other media members haven't. There's a lot of media members now that have gone, that go after Dak.
No doubt.
And he's kind of taken the other, you know, he's taken the opposite. You know, talk about former Eagles, like Shady McCoy has taken the approach.
Dak stinks.
Yeah, he's taken.
Quarterback in the league.
You know, Kelce understands that when you talk about the Cowboys, you get people to, you know, you get people's attention. When Shady McCoy talks about it, you piss people off.
But when Jason says he's figured it out, or Travis says that, we're talking about media relations. Like you saw in the second half, and you might see for a quarter or two against the Saints. Right. This offense is getting the brakes put on it way too much.
Yeah, you're going to need to see some improvement. There's no doubt there. That second half was not pretty.
Nope.
NFL averaging 21 million viewers per game during their opening week. That is up 12% over last year, according to Nielsen. I'm still trying to find out who Nielsen is. But 123 million people saw at least part of one game, its highest total for an opening week since 2019. So the NFL still very, very healthy. And they're probably pumped because scoring was up for the first time in 2 years on opening week as well. Yes, scoring was up this past week. So NFL week one numbers are suggesting that offenses, really, really good. NFL saw 45.8 points per game across the 16 contests, highest since 2021, and it gets the league above the 45-point watermark, which it's hoping to hit every week this season. So, incredible. And there were 35 passing touchdowns thrown in week one. That was the fewest, though, since 2006. So a lot of rushing scores coming up. Most rushing scores since the merger in a week one in the National Football League. So passing touchdowns down, rushing touchdowns up, but overall offense was up for week one in the NFL.
Reason to take away another preseason game, Dawson?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can get rid of all of them. You know, I
don't need them.
Everybody will argue that the play was really sloppy. It was sloppy play, but the numbers tell you that that the scoring was up. So, I mean, is really which one was it? Sloppy play or these offenses are... They don't need the extra preseason
stuff.
Yeah, I
mean, look, it's probably a combination of the two, but either way, it's like it wasn't stopping people from watching football.
No,
so it's okay. We can watch a little bit of sloppy play for a week, and they'll get it all figured out. I don't think it's like a detriment to the game.
I just heard a bunch of people talking about that they felt like the games weren't very, you know,
because you don't have your first team in there, you know, and if you're not going to put your first team in there at all, you can do your evaluations in these joint practices.
Yeah, but I also think you're talking about just there's a lot of not good quarterbacks in the league right now. And some of that is guys that are just bad and we know they're bad. Or some of that is just there's a bunch of young guys that are learning on the fly. How many rookies started this past week? How many guys are in year two like Bryce Young and still haven't figured it out?
Yeah.
So I think how many guys are Kirk Cousins right now, and he's not the same version of himself.
And defenses took a big step last year.
They did.
You know, like they have turned a lot of offenses into dink and dunk, and it's going to acquire a lot of sophistication with your scheme and your quarterback's abilities to find the windows to throw in down the field. It's getting harder and harder to do it.
Well, yeah. And because last year the NFL the defense is taking that step and the numbers being down offensively, the NFL's got to be pumped that the numbers were up for week one. So we'll see if that trend ends up continuing.
Dude, I when you really look at these quarterbacks that are starting in the NFL, there's so many bad starting quarterbacks right now. Bad starting quarterbacks.
That's why these teams are paying the guys. Like if you have somebody that's good, you know, they're paying them. It's like, hey, if I got a guy that's borderline top 10, I'm probably giving him the contract.
And how many good ones do we have? I mean, Tua's good. New England's bad. Buffalo's good. Aaron Rodgers is good, right? There's 3 out of 4.
Yeah, but he's still not the same version of himself. You know, Joe Burrow came out of the gates slow as well. That's a guy that you expect to be good. But it's rookie quarterback. So Caleb Williams, you have Bo Nix. Deshaun Watson's terrible. Anthony Richardson's still growing.
God, the Giants.
Jaden Daniels still growing. You have Kirk Cousins. He's a problem. Daniel Jones is a problem. Trevor Lawrence, super up and down. Aaron Rodgers, not himself at this point. Jordan Love looked a little bit shaky. Bryce Young is bad. Jacoby Brissett, Gardner Minshew. I mean, my
about
goodness.
Half the league.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Will Levis, Sam Darnold was good this past week, but, you know, Justin Fields, that's a lot of not good quarterbacks.
A lot
play.
Of mediocre and then a lot of bad. Absolutely.
And scoring was up.
And scoring was up. Rushing touchdowns.
Wow.
Most rushing touchdowns since the merger. Okay, we got Bills-Dolphins tonight.
I do think that's a lot of teams paying a lot more attention to the run game, though. I know you're trying to move on, but they're looking at how defenses are playing. And, like, guys, if we can't run against a light box that has two safeties back the majority of the time, what are we doing?
Well, it's that and it's the running quarterback.
The quarterback, right.
Yeah. Jay Daniels had two rushing touchdowns. It's the quarterback certainly being willing to run.
Which is the same thing. It's what Shoddy told us.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately,
that's a weapon.
The answer is the quarterback's taking the risk to
absolutely
run it because defenses are built now to challenge you to do that, and they believe teams aren't going to.
And they're not accounting for that extra player in the quarterback there. If they're going to take out and run, that can be a big thing. Now, everyone's wondering, like, Achane, is he playing tonight? There's optimism that he's going to play with his ankle injury. I did see Jordan Schultz report that rookie running back Jalen Wright expected to be active tonight, make his NFL debut. Raheem Mostert is out. Achan is questionable. We'll see. Maybe we get a heavy dose of Jalen Wright out of Tennessee, who is kind of my pet cat during this running back draft. But I don't know.
Especially in PPR, because he'll catch some passes. They showed in the preseason they want to throw him the football. Achan's a guy that catches a lot of passes, especially this past week. So if Achan's going to be on a snap count, Wright or Jeff Wilson could be solid plays.
Yeah, both of those guys probably going to get some playing time. And Dolphin fans are optimistic. Like Achan was posting on his Instagram that he's going to be playing. So we'll see when we get closer to kickoff tonight. If we get something either way, we'll let you know. Now, there was this comment made by Kyler Murray that I know has made some unhappy. I also thought it was a little bit of a strange comment, but Marvin Harrison Jr. did not have a good week one. It was actually a historically poor performance. One catch, 4 yards on 3 targets, including a drop. So since 2000, Cardinals wideouts week one outings have been 60 out of 61 among qualified receivers. They've been amongst the worst in the National Football League. But we did see plays where Marvin Harrison Jr. is running open, specifically for a game-winning touchdown. Yeah. Kyler doesn't throw him the football. He was asked about that, and here was Kyler's response.
It looked like Marvin had some space
down
the field. Did you see him there?
Nah.
Just because you were moving around better?
Yeah, you play football, like, there's a lot of stuff moving around. You're moving fast, like, you don't see everything.
What were they doing to take away Marvin?
Honestly, man, I wouldn't say they were just taking him away. I think, you know, I'm just, as a quarterback, obviously, you're going through your read. Sometimes the ball goes to him, but that's not, you know, it's not my job. Obviously, I have a sense and a feel for guys when they don't get the ball and when they're, you know, when they are getting the ball, but, you know, I leave that up to Drew. You know, Drew always, you know, he tells me don't worry about that type of stuff. Just keep playing your game and, you know, get the ball to where the ball's supposed to go.
What? It's not my job. Kyler, your job, that is exactly your job, right? Quarterback's job is to throw to the open receiver. Now, I get it. Maybe the play's not designed to go to Marvin Harrison Jr. Totally fair. I'm going through my prior progressions. But that... And I know Ryan Fitzpatrick was on with Up and Adams and hated this comment as well. He was like, when you have a special receiver, like, I don't give a damn. If the play call was called that, like, I'm always trying to at least look over and see, is he open? I'll go through the play as it's designed, but I'm always kind of keeping an eye on that receiver. And for Kyler, man...
He just distanced himself like he's not even a part of the process at all.
I hated the comment here from him.
Yeah, it's fair to hate that. That's not the response you want from your quarterback right there, and it makes him not the easiest person to like and get along with. How can Marvin Harrison appreciate a comment like that? Now, I will say, I saw some of the speed numbers, and I saw some of the clips of Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, looking like he's laboring, looking slow. I don't know what it was in terms of if he was just not happy with the way the game was going, and so he wasn't running fast, but like he maxed out at 16.7 miles per hour, which is slower than any one of these rookie receivers over the weekend. I mean, even Keenan Allen, old man, who was being called fat all off season, was 18.3 topped out at. Marvin Harrison was 16.7. That feels a little bit weird.
It does. And hey, we've seen receivers kind of get dejected when they're not involved in it. And Marvin Harrison Jr. needs to also take it upon himself, like learning moment, let me get better as well, let me make sure that I am getting open.
So yeah, it was a bad drop.
Yeah, I mean, he's a rookie, right? Like, he needs to learn trust from his quarterback too, but yeah, your job's a thoroughly open guy. And if he's wide open for a game-winning touchdown, you probably should have, hopefully, as a fan, like, I'm hoping you see that guy.
It's been a couple of years since we had that Kyler Murray, real acceleration in the news cycle as far as his leadership. And I'd hoped, you know, he's getting into his mid-20s now, that something would improve for him. I'm pulling for the guy. I love watching him play. You know, the escapability, the quickness. I love his arm.
Local
kid. But I would not want him as my team's quarterback. You know, this is a moment. I don't know if Marvin Harrison is going to be the great NFL player that it looked like at times he was going to be at Ohio State. Maybe Kyler Murray is trying to keep the young kid accountable, you know, and tell that kid, hey, you got to be better. But the way that things come off, you know, I think it's better that he's just silent. I think it's better that he's the silent version.
I think, I mean, we've seen so many quarterbacks, whether it was just recently with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, and there's an issue there. Josh Allen was always saying, he's holding himself accountable first. He's never pointing the finger at anybody else. And yeah, it's just one of these things with Kyler where it's always, it kind of seems like it's deflection, right? It's not my problem, right? Somebody else's. This is a feud, Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones. Don Van Natta actually has a big old piece on ESPN Today about Robert Kraft and his desire to try and get into the Hall of Fame. He's been waiting now for 15 years. Now, we had part of the story. Some voters believe he was part of the biggest cheating scandal in NFL history. That's a tough one to overcome. That was one voter that told Don Van Natta that in regards to Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft also apparently very upset that Jerry Jones is in the Hall of Fame, and he is not in the Hall of Fame. He said Jerry hasn't made a conference championship in over two decades, yet he's in the Hall, and I'm not.
Wow, is that him by name?
It's a contributor thing, right? He made all those gentlemen billionaires, and some of the ladies, too, that own teams. Their families are billionaires because of the contributions. That's what Jerry Jones is in for, right? Not being a general manager. It's the contributions that he made to the NFL. Bob Kraft needs to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of voters were saying that it just seems like super needy and they're turned off by this push from Bob Kraft. But Peter King's got his back. He said, has there ever been a player, a coach, an owner, a commissioner who has a perfect resume, who has never done anything wrong? Look at Joe Namath. He threw more interceptions than touchdowns. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Well, there's a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that probably shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. You know, you go back, some of those quarterbacks from the 60s and 70s that their numbers weren't, you know, but it was a different era of football and all that. But still, they were the best. I think a couple of guys like
we didn't know you should be throwing four touchdowns for every pick back in the day, you know, or at least two and a half.
Yeah. There's your NFL News of the Day.
Thank you, Old Chuck. NFL News Today, most days, 3 o'clock here in the G-Bag Nation. What we have coming up next is a C-Note, Cowboys News of the Evening, key storylines for Cowboys Saints. Broadus is going to break down the film on the Saints defense. What's the Cowboys offense in for coming up Sunday at noon? And those are the next two segments right here on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Fan. Yeah, buddy, let's go. It's time for the C-Note, Cowboys News of the Evening here in the G-Bag Nation. And why this Cowboys Saints game might be the terrific barometer for how well this season is going to go. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's been in an accident due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels for a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Jump online to frankelfirm.com. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate your vehicle today. carsforkids.org. And we go to DallasCowboys.com, where they have posted storylines for Cowboys Saints. And the first one that jumped out to me, I'm only going to give you two. They have 10 in there if you want to go read the rest of them. But just that the Saints might be figuring things out and are about to emerge as one of the new teams that, you know, looks solid out there and is trying to become a contender. If you go back to last year, the Saints have won 5 of 6. And they actually have scored 40-plus two games in a row. This goes back to even last year before they brought in Clint Kubiak. Had one of the most impressive wins of any team in week one, 47-10, 37 points, biggest blowout margin and all that, but not the most points that New Orleans has scored in 2024. To end the regular season, back in January, the Saints put 48 in a win up over the Falcons. Brian, this is a great opportunity. Yesterday, you previewed the Saints' offense for us. Do you get the feeling watching this that the combination of Kamara and Olave and, you know, Derek Carr is setting this team up to be, you know, a powerful force? Or what was your vibe?
Yeah, I feel like, though, that you have with Carmichael used to be the primary play caller. He, you know, Sean was a play caller, and then Pete Carmichael became the play caller, and they got really stale looking.
He'd been there for like two decades.
Oh, no. Yeah. He and Sean were forever together. And in matter of fact, he was the guy that was kind of, Sean was calling the plays, but Pete was putting together the menu and stuff like that. And Sean was cooking the meal. But they got, when Pete became a play caller, then all of a sudden they kind of, they lost a little bit of their identity. They tried some things with the Taysom Hill stuff. I mean, Pete was still trying to do those things, and it just really wasn't working out. When you, Clint Kubiak, it just in one game sample size, the motion to a double motion, to alignment, to playing with a fullback, to putting guys in positions, to the bunch formations, the motions, the quick, you know, the ball with the Saints, it's always been kind of going down the field, go down the field. This is more the number, more in between the hashes, in between the numbers. This guy didn't miss a throw. Everything was kind of intermediate underneath, like, hey, get the ball in your hands. We don't know how good our offensive line's going to be. Play under center a bunch, hand the ball to Kamara. That way, instead of like putting the shotgun and making him play sideways.
Lots of play action.
Yeah. I mean, there's a you know, it's clearly a different offense the way they play now.
And it's an offense that the Cowboys have struggled against under, you know, Dan Quinn and Rod Marinelli before that. Whenever you'd find some sort of this motion, you saw it against Green Bay. Obviously, San Francisco does it quite well. The Rams historically have, you know, kind of had the Cowboys number when they had the personnel. So it kind of comes down to the first great test for Zimmer's defense. Like right now, the narrative is Zimmer has made the Cowboys defense better, and along with Overshown and Kendricks and maybe Joseph and Mozzie Smith playing better, this is going to be a completely different look. Well, I think we get the truth to that maybe by 1:30 or 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon in the middle of that game.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of a truth serum game. Is this New Orleans Saints offense legit, or was it just going up against maybe the worst defense in football, the Panthers, last year? Is this Cowboys defense legit, or was it just going up against Deshaun Watson and a broken offensive line? We'll get a chance to really see that. But I think it'll be it's a nice challenge. It's a nice challenge for the Cowboys defense here because the scheme and everything that Kubiak is running right now is absolutely what you would want out of your football team in this day and age of offensive football. And they've got a lot of versatility with their skill guys.
The running backs specifically, like Kamara.
Moving Jamal guys around Williams, like crazy.
Yeah, what they're able to do there. I think the right side of their offensive line is susceptible.
I agree.
Olave did not have a great game. He's certainly their best receiver. Shahid's a guy that can go deep for Anya. I mean, no doubt about that. I'm with you. Like I think there's
Foster Moreau is a tight end. They've thrown the ball. They went from being one of the teams that does never ever targets the tight end to now targeting. I think they were number one in targets to the tight end in this just in one game. I know small sample size, but they never threw the ball to the tight end, and now they're trying to kind of find ways to make those throws.
So that's Moreau's a guy to circle.
Derek Carr is a guy though that is we know about him being under pressure. He's kind of like one of these Jared Goff dudes. Yeah. He's a solid quarterback, but under pressure, he is not himself.
Well, but he likes to throw the tight end.
Yeah, but that's what they've tried to do, and they're not allowing him to get hit. I mean, Carolina does not have the type of pass rush. I mean, they've got some guys.
But exactly.
You know, and Zach's right. The right side of that Saints offensive line is susceptible to giving up some pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Saints, there's definitely a little bit of over-exaggeration personally with how good they are and how good this offense is heading into this week. I think they kicked maybe the worst team in football's ass on Sunday.
Right.
And so all these numbers are looking fantastic. I think the Cowboys defense is going to have a totally different type of game plan under Mike Zimmer for them that they're not really going to be able for four quarters to sustain. But it is a fun challenge because for 3 years under Dan Quinn, if there is something that he didn't have an answer for, it was all of this motion, and the Saints ran a lot of it in week one.
Yep. Does Derek Carr pass your guys' line of good NFL quarterback?
He's solid to good.
Yeah. Made the cut.
Yeah. I would say that he's in that good range. Yeah.
Okay. Two offensive players the Cowboys should use more in week two. Maybe there's an offensive player you want to see the Cowboys use more in week two. This is Blogging the Boys. We're going to start with a tweet they pull from Skywalker Steele.
Mm.
He's got stacked box numbers. With Rico in the game, the Browns stacked the box 62.5% of the time, with Zeke 20% of the time. What do you think of that metric there, Brian?
Yeah, clearly they think that one of them is quicker, faster than the other, that they can play more of a base style of a defense, so they don't need to go with the heavy box because they feel like that they could rally before that guy gets to the hole.
Yeah, I also would love to like dive into these because some of this is Zeke was on the field a lot more, playing on third down, playing in obvious passing situations where, okay, we're not concerned about stopping your run here. And Zeke benefited from that on at least one of his carries. It was a third and quite a bit, and he ran for like 9 yards. Yeah. And it's like, that's fine. We don't care about a 9 yard run on third down and 13 or whatever.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I think I would do that research if I'm in the Cowboys building this week, because I think we're making a Jason Witten level mistake here, where a significantly inferior player is going out onto the field because of the respect that he gets in the locker room or whatever.
See, this is where the second half of that game, and I get killed for this, but this is in the second half of this game. You give a team that you have on the ropes that you know they're not coming back,
and you have no faith in running against.
Yeah, and get killed for it. Zach Martin apparently said the exact same thing today in the locker room.
He said
they missed an opportunity in the second half.
I just feel like that to me that, you know, if all of a sudden the Browns are not coming back in that football game, let's load this thing up and see if we can really run the ball against them. They're kind of wore down, they're beat up, they're tired, but it's still a great test to see if we can block their linebackers and block their front. And you just kind of just let that thing go where you could have killed. Even if you don't have great success, you give some confidence maybe, and people say, well, what about the other end if you'd got stuffed? Well, if you get stuffed, then you know damn good and well you have no running game. You know, that's one of the better run defenses you're going to play right there.
Yeah.
And if you get stuffed, now you need to go back and think about, are we good enough at running back? Are schemes good enough up front blocking the way we block? You learn something about yourself that way.
Yeah, and I think the Cowboys wanted to run the ball going into 2023. They tried up until the bye week, and they were like, this isn't working. Yeah. I think in the second half, when the times they did run it, the production was so pathetic that they answered that question. We can't. And they were like, well, if we're going to have any chance of moving the chains, it's got to be with the passing game. And that's got to be a big red flag, because I feel like your offensive line is good enough that you should have at least some level of confidence in your running game. So if we're that unconfident and we're going to send Zeke out there again, that is organizational malpractice. I think anybody involved with the Cowboys should be, at the very least, printing off a bunch of these copies and anonymously handing them out. If you think it's too big of a party foul to actually bring that up in a meeting, that, guys, we should not be putting Zeke on the field, do it anonymously. But somebody, please be our hero up there and save us again from this. I wanted to believe that, you know, Zeke could come back, find a fountain of youth, but the numbers are staggering, and the fact that you weren't even trying to run the ball in the second half tells me you don't have faith in him or Rico. Yeah. And why should you?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that there were times they didn't, but they were. I think the opening drive, they went three straight passes. You know, to me, there could be a mix. There could be the play action mix. There could be the run mix. But you're right. Maybe they looked at it and they said, "Hey, we're not gonna have any success." But I would have gone to it and tried to say, "Okay, let's see if we can find some creative ways." They were doing things with the traps and things like that. You know, if you have some success running in the second half, you feel a little bit like, okay, this is a good defense. You know, this is a good defense we just moved the ball running against. And that would give you some confidence going forward here, because you're going to play some games where you're going to need that four-minute offense.
Yeah.
And when I say four-minute offense, that's the offense that kills games.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if you get into a four-minute offense and you can't do that, then you're going to go back at this game against Cleveland, I think, and say, why did we not try and see what we could maybe accomplish? Instead, we just let it pass by.
Yeah, we're up four, we're up three. What we don't need is to get a quick field goal. What we need to be able to do is make three first downs and end this game.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, I don't think you're legitimate in January. And right now, I'd be looking at the rest of my team like, damn it, we're good. We got a lot of good players on this team. We need to take care of this running game right now.
I know the game was really close. It was a two-point game, the Texans and the Colts. But you watch what the Texans did in the last 4 minutes of that game to kill it.
Yeah.
And Joe Mixon, and here's a guy they picked up during the, you know, basically during training camp and said, okay, well, here we go. Let's go for it. Let's run this way. And they did. And you could see on their sideline when that game was over, the final first down, there was a sense of pride that they found a way to finish that game running the ball. And I think they'll be a better team for it down the stretch, because they felt like, hey, we needed to run the ball. Mission accomplished.
Outside of the 1 year with DeMarco Murray, where they had him for 4 years, but only really used him once. And then like 2.5 years with Zeke, or 1.5 years with Zeke. This last 15 years, I mean, it's been a joke. The Joe Randall thing, you know, the Darren McFadden year, you know, like it's just been really for a long, long time. I mean, you can go back to Felix and find
Felix Jones,
a fat guy in training camp out in Oxnard, California, that was scheduled to be their running back number one that year. You know, it's just I don't know how they could be so brilliant at some positions and have, you know, I think a massive blind spot here with what it's going to take. And then when they do find one, they overpay him worse than anybody in the league. It's just crazy. Okay, we got to run, Krusty. What's coming up next?
Yeah, let's talk about this New Orleans defense. There's some things you need to know about it. We'll do that next.
Thank you, Lucius. So we'll get to Krusty's Corner here in 2 seconds. Jake Ferguson, DNP today. Same with John Stevens. What are they looking at tight end, Brian?
Yeah, that would be probably, they have an elevation maybe with Fant. You get two elevations, you know, per game from the practice squad, so you have to be careful about that. They might have to do Carl Lawson depending on what happens with Nealon.
Limited.
Yeah, so I would keep an eye on that tight end position for sure.
Okay, with the Saints, Talisa Fuaga, the starting rookie tackle.
Left tackle, yeah. He showed up with a back.
So, DNP.
Yeah, he DNP'd it.
That is big.
That is huge for them.
Same with Lattimore again.
Yeah, Lattimore, I believe, is a hamstring, and that would mean that Kool-Aid McKinstry would start there.
Sign me up for CeeDee Lamb versus Kool-Aid McKinstry. I mean, Kool-Aid, good player, a lot of speed, but he's a guy that will gamble, and you can beat him deep. I think CeeDee could feast versus Kool-Aid. That is a plus matchup for the Cowboys.
Tyrann Mathieu limited for the Saints. Didn't realize he'd gone home there.
Yeah, I'll tell you where the thing with Mathieu is, you have to be careful with him because what happens when he's involved in a tackle, he's always punching at the ball.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that's kind of figured out that, like, okay, I might not be able to, like, run you down or anything like that, but when he gets in position, he's figured out how to, you know, his career's been creating turnovers.
Yeah.
So if he gets in the game, anything that where he's around, you have to be very, very careful of him creating turnovers there.
He is the man, and he's had a great career. It's time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Brian.
Thank you very much, General. I appreciate that. With this Saints defense, and I'm really, this was one of those times where I was, you know, you think about the opponent, and you think about the quarterback, and you think about the youth of the quarterback with Bryce Young, and you wonder, did the Saints play this game with Bryce Young in mind with what they tried to do to him? And I was, because what happened, this was the Saints, I feel like, have got some guys that are legitimate pass rushers. When you talk about Cam Jordan, when you talk about Carl Granderson, you know, when you also, you know, Chase Young, who they, you know, was with the Washington and then with the 49ers, you know, these guys are all can rush the passer. But this was a weird game in a way, and I had to look this up because I kept noticing on tape. The Saints had, and I'm just, this is exactly what it was from the metrics. The Saints had 5 off-ball players generate a pressure in this game.
Yeah, they were blitzing.
Yeah,
they've got good linebackers.
Yeah, the Saints sent 12 different players who did not play edge or defensive tackles on blitzes in this game. They got 8 pressures on 14 blitzes. So that's something. I don't know if it was one of those things. There was one time I was watching their nickelback, Alante Taylor, had 3 sacks in this game. So, you know, here's a team that was bringing safeties. They were bringing linebackers. They're bringing nickel guys. They were doing things in a way that really gave the Carolina Panthers a lot of problems. And I don't know how you go into this game thinking like, okay, well, this might be our plan, but they might also feel like there was one of the teams that was 28th in the league last year in sacks. And they might feel like, you know what, if we don't generate pressure, we're in trouble in these games. So this could be the new identity of the Saints, is finding a way to bring pressure, whether it's slot pressure, safety pressure, linebacker pressure. That might be that way because of their, but I mentioned about Granderson and Jordan and also with Young. Those guys I think are capable pass rushers, but it was pressure through other means that they were able to get that home.
Yeah. Well, I'd love it if they try that against the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because Dak understands that. Dak is, you know, there was times in this game where Bryce Young, where they gave up a sack, Bryce Young moved a running back from his left to his right. And they brought the pressure off the left. It ended up being a sack. And the running back he moved never blocked anybody.
It's a big difference going up against Bryce Young versus Dak.
And maybe it was. Maybe it was one of these games where they felt like, okay, we can confuse this kid. They're going to play a ton of press coverage. They have. That's just the way they are. They've done it for the last 2 years.
A lot of man.
Yeah, they are just, I don't think they respected Carolina's wide receivers in this game at all. The Carolina actually only had 5 completions when the Saints played man coverage against them. So a lot of single high look. You know,
Dak dominates that.
Yeah, and what you got to worry about a little bit, though, and missing maybe Ferguson in this game, or having a tight end when you play single high is those seam routes that you're able to kind of get the ball up the field that way.
Dak loves throwing those.
Yeah, loves throwing the seam.
Man, it's probably his best throw. I wonder if Hunter Lipke, you start to see a lot more of him Hunter take Lipke, over that role this, a little bit.
Let me just throw it out there. Big game potentially. Not big game, but big game for him as a Dallas Cowboy is Luke Schoonmaker. Luke, sure. If these tight ends don't play, Luke Schoonmaker is going to have to find a way to step up in one of these games. You know, he is going to have to be a guy that they rely on here. So we'll see how it all plays out there. We mentioned Marshawn Lattimore on the injury report right there. I'll say this. I went back and looked at this because I was curious when the last time that Lattimore and CeeDee Lamb played. They did play against each other in 2021. Lattimore carried him 5 times in that game at 36 routes. And Lattimore had an interception, only allowed 1 reception on 3 targets. Against all the other defensive backs in that game, Lamb had 6 receptions for 86 yards. So if Lattimore doesn't play, you're going to see, we mentioned McKistry. McKistry was he was an accomplished DB at Alabama, but last week he only gave up 1 reception on 3 targets. He had 17 snaps that he played in as well, so that's something that you have to keep an eye on, because the one thing is that, you know, Lattimore, he's got that kind of ability to lock your guy down. But with the hamstring, I think that's maybe a little bit of a tall order. He hasn't practiced the last couple of days. I mentioned about the pass rush. Chase Young, I'm going to say, is probably the guy that I would worry about the most. I know Cam Jordan. Cam Jordan's a lot like when you look at what Tank Lawrence does for the Cowboys. He's a good run defender. He's got the ability to pass rush at times, but I don't think he has the quickness, though, of maybe what Tank was. So they went and got Chase Young, and he plays mainly on the right side. He's going to, you know, he gets that opportunity to go against Tyler Guyton. Of all the guys that rushed, Young had the most pressures in this game. I mean, he had 25 pass rushes. And he had 6 pressures, and you could see it. That was double more than any of the other Saints pass rushers in this game. So you have to be ready for him jumping around blocks. He's not afraid to take a chance and just rush inside to attempt to make a stop. He'll freelance a little bit on you, in that different way. I mentioned Granderson. He's kind of a long, edgy, rangy type of a guy. Plays well really on the move. He's got a slippery element to his game, so we'll see what happens with, Terrence Steele played really well for you last week. We'll see if he can back that up with another good game and having to deal with Granderson. The linebackers, they're not as good as what you saw last week. The linebackers at Cleveland are clearly better players. Pete Warner and Demario Davis are, like I say, the linebackers on this team. There's nothing flashy about these guys. I've seen them both get in position to make plays and then miss in space. The one thing that the Browns linebackers were able to do, they were able to tackle. And so this group right here, with what I saw in the games, was that Warner and Davis both position guys, but might miss as well. So I feel like I say the crew you played in Cleveland is a little bit better group for you to go against right there.
Well, it's about time Demario Davis isn't one of the best linebackers in the league. Seems like for the last 10 years, he's just been a model of consistency.
Yeah, well, it was, like I say, with Warner, there were times where the ball got to the outside a little bit, and he was running to get there and just was a step or two late. So
yeah, they're not the fastest guys. They tried to add some speed with Willie Gay, who they brought in from the Chiefs.
Yeah. This front, as I mentioned, I gave you the names of the guys. They'll like to angle the front, and the combination with the linebackers, they'll angle the front and then they'll fill with the linebacker to the back side of that. So whatever way they angle, say they go to the left, they'll take the linebacker and put him to right. So what they're really trying to do is kind of fill all the gaps there in the run defense. And so that's the way that they're going to kind of play. So you might be able to pop a run or two on these guys, because what will happen is they'll slant one way and then the ball might go the other. So they'll slant themselves. They'll take themselves out of the play. Carolina was able to kind of take advantage of that a couple of different times. We'll see if Dallas is committed to trying to run the football a little bit more in this game. And if they have some success, it might be because you see a slant front, and then they're able to hit the slant front going opposite of where they're taking the football here. So it's a defense that's it's with the pass rush. It's been a lot about the blitzes, especially last week. I will be interested to see if they try and do the same thing to Dak. I think that would kind of be disastrous for them if they try and blitz him, because Dak won't miss those reads like that kid at Carolina did last week.
No, that's for sure. I think your best bet is just trying to time something up nicely to confuse the lineman, like what happened. Yeah. It ended up being a touchdown for the Cowboys to Brandon Cooks, but the lineman screwed it up and allowed a free rusher right up the middle.
Inside,
and
so if you're the Saints, like, bust,
can we try and confuse the offensive line, because Dak's not going to be confused.
Man, Brian, appreciate the breakdown.
Yep.
I love it. Krusty's Corner every Wednesday and Thursday, 3:40, delivers the scouting report for your Cowboys opponent. Tomorrow, what you drinking, what you thinking at 5:20, Brian is going to take down the Lil Nitro Gummy Bear, the world's hottest gummy bear. And I'm just reading online people talking about this thing. Dude, there and on X, they're really saying, do not do this. He said, I had trouble with this. I'm an extreme hot sauce guy.
Yeah. Saw that.
This is going to end badly for you. This is no joke.
Yeah, saw that too.
Please be careful, Brian. Don't do this, Brian. How about D-Town Fan Man? The cardiologist better be on call for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this is tomorrow at 5:20, a can't-miss radio event. A man of Brian's age attempting the Little Nitro Gummy Bear. I don't know if anybody this old has ever eaten one of these.
No, this has to be the most hazardous payoff weed.
Should we get Guinness here? Like, is this a Guinness Book of World Records?
Yeah.
World record? Oldest
well,
man
ever? Well, they say it's 900 times the of a jalapeno pepper, right?
That's what they say. No, I think it's like 900,000 or 900 million.
I was reading the box. I was doing a little box research here.
Sometimes the box will fool you.
Box score.
9 million Scoville, right? 9 million Scoville. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Scoville? 9 million Scoville.
Making it 900 times hotter than a jalapeno pepper.
I hope you don't have an ulcer. And if you don't today, you will certainly by Saturday morning.
You're gonna be just fine, Brian. Got this, man.
I think so too.
Very confident after a couple of weeks ago, our remote downtown where he's
Moxies.
Trying all kinds of hot sauces. Yeah. I think that it's confidence a new ball might game. Get the best of you. Okay, the GOAT has high praise for your Cowboys. Is he working an angle here trying to get the job, or is this genuine? It's next in the nation.